Hello and welcome to English Podcasts with Chris and Sue. For more information, visit english-podcasts.com.
Hello, Renu.
Hello, Chris.
Renu, can you tell me about your, I think it's an association? Is it an association?
Yeah, we have an organization. Actually, it's not, it's legally speaking, it's a proprietorship. It's my firm. And it's Course 3, which means woman. And it's for the welfare of women through empowerment and the welfare of the earth, which is also considered a feminine body, a mother earth, through sustainability. So we work with sustainable products. We make sustainable products, we source sustainable products, and we give women employment and awareness on ethical living, really. Ethical sounds a bit moralistic. You can ask me more about that later if you want, but, sustainable lifestyle, really.
Okay, and what do you actually do? Do you sort of go to villages or go to cities and find women that need work, or do you, hold seminars? How do you get these people, these women?
Well, some of them are local, and so we get them through word of mouth, because it's not like you can advertise anywhere, because they're not, a lot of them aren't literate, so they're not on Facebook or anything. So it's just through word of mouth, and they're usually women in slum areas. And then other women, we have a lot of women in organizations that are doing something similar in other parts of India who I've, been networking with for, a couple of years now. So we're not just, although we wanted to just focus on the local women here, it wasn't possible because we didn't have the facility to train them all in the skills that we needed to make the products that we needed to, make the money, revenue that we needed in order to sustain these women.
Okay, so they make textile objects, don't they?
Yeah, it's textiles and other sustainable things, other natural things like incense and soaps and lifestyle products, I'd call it. But yeah, we're focused on textiles and we're interested in, making, using sustainable materials and, and paying, according to fair trade standards.
Okay. And what is the sort of it's a business, okay, it's not a charity. Yeah. What is your sort of mission statement?
Mission statement is empower women, heal Mother Earth.
Okay. Right. And yeah. Could you talk about some successes that you've had?
Well, successes, it depends on what you mean by success, but...
Well, in terms of, you said you're trying to make them autonomous, so I guess the idea is that they run with the ball after you help them to... Is that what you're trying to do? You're trying to help them to produce these objects themselves and therefore become independent stroke autonomous in terms of their finances. Is that it? Or
yeah, I mean that is the ideal. But it's not like a success story in terms of like, okay, now you've given her wings and she can fly and she flies off. But it's a continuous thing that the women do. It's continuous employment that the women do because there's always more and more needs. The children are growing up, the children need, more expensive uniforms, they need, they have to pay higher fees in the school as they grow up. So it's not like there's an end point, and then they want to save for the child's marriage and it goes on and on. It's like it's going to be a continuous process for us to, to maintain themselves. But
okay.
The success story is that at least, a lot of these women are allowed to work at home, whereas they wouldn't be able to normally work from home, because they've got a lot of kids running around, and they can still work. And so that's a success story that they can actually do, healthy, employment at home at their own pace. you know, and get paid rather than, you know, not having any employment because they can't leave the house, you know?
Okay. So they become almost employees. Is that right? Or they become independent?
They're more like independent, what do you call, self-employed, really, I'd say.
Okay, right.
They're self-employed workers. So when we have a demand for a certain product, then we get them, you know, working on that particular product.
Okay. Do you help them with, I mean, do they need any machinery or anything like this to produce the things, looms or whatever, sewing machines?
Yeah, they do, and we have women working with looms and sewing machines, which we have given for when the work comes up. We provide them with the machines if they don't already have them, and you know, during the my organization set up like about how many months? About 6 months before. About 9 months before COVID hit India and the lockdown. So we were sort of very slow in building up, as you are in the beginning of any business. So, and then COVID struck. So unfortunately, there wasn't that much work because the type of products that we produce are more kind of high end because they're made of sustainable natural materials and they're more expensive to source. So, yeah, so we hope that we'll pick up post-COVID. We hope we'll pick up now. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the case because Indian tourism has been banned and a lot of Westerners would like our products. We have a little shop as well, you know, so in a location that someone called the Times Square of Rishikesh.
Is it Mahatma Gandhi Road? No?
No, we don't have those here.
No. But where do you source your raw materials from? The cotton or whatever, you silk or whatever?
Well, mainly we source them from the southern states of India because that's where cotton grows in abundance. And that's where they seem to do a lot of like manufacturing of the raw material.
How does this affect the carbon footprint of what you produce?
Well, it does, but what to do? I mean, it's still within the country. And then,
it's a big country, though.
Yeah, it's a big country. Yeah, compared to, you know, it's probably the size of, I don't know, is it the size of Europe?
Oh, surely bigger. I'd imagine.
You reckon? It's
bigger. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, because the fabric is just not available here. So, you know, what to do? It's available in the southern states. And we do the natural dyeing in this state, you know, but we source the raw materials for natural dyeing from other states.
Okay.
Some of them aren't available.
Where do you sell the finished product, apart from in your shop?
In my shop,
as you say, the tourists are not coming through the doors at the moment.
Yeah. So we have an Etsy store and we have an online store on our website. So that's how we sell the products right now. So they're the...
How does that measure up with your sort of sustainability and with e-commerce?
Well, e-commerce, again, you're going to tell me about carbon footprints. And yes, we do export. So you can imagine the number of carbon footprints that go into that. So, you know, I wrote this article one day because I questioned, like you're questioning. I mean, I don't mean questioning interrogative. Mm-hmm. What's the word?
Interrogative.
Interrogative, sorry. I know you're not questioning like that, but I question like that. I question myself, you know, about, you know, my ideal is to be sustainable. And yet, you know, we export, but then what do you do? How do you generate income for the women to empower them? So it's kind of like a loop that we're in.
Yeah.
You know, because if we just work with local products, local, you know, raw materials, then we're not going to be able to produce, you know, the amazing stuff to produce the income to support the women. So, you know, there is a compromise, I would say. And it's like, you know, I'm one of these people that sometimes sits on perfection and says, oh, I can't do this because it's not perfect, you know. But then it's like, come on, you're not going to do anything, because everything you do, you know, every step you take practically, you know, from using my laptop to, you know, speaking to you and everything, as sustainable as my house can be, it's not sustainable. You know, then I wrote an article, blog, it's on my website, like, is your life sustainable or is my life sustainable? And yeah, it's not. But we're just moving closer to the ideal, you know. And then it's all connected into consumerism, you know, and people like to buy things that are, you know, ethnic and, you know, from, I don't know, that are not available in their countries. And, you know, I was looking on websites, I won't name any names because I don't want to be sued for defamation or whatever, but I was looking at clothes on different websites because I was looking at designs, you know, from different parts of the world, let's make it general. And, you know, and now they're writing, you know, how it's sourced, you know, where it's sourced from. So, like, a lot of stuff is being sourced from Bangladesh, you know, a lot of stuff is being sourced from China, and some of these big brands are selling them, you know, at, like, prices that beat India, you know. And it's like, what's going on? This is not a fair trade, you know, which is all part of sustainability. Sustainability to me does not mean, you know, when I say heal Mother Earth, I don't just mean the earth. I mean whatever exists on the earth, you know, that we should treat people fairly as part of, you know, ethical fashion is the word now. You know, I don't know how much these women in Bangladesh are getting and how much these people in China are getting, but you're certainly getting a damn cheap product, you know, and it's bloody good, yeah. You know. So, you know, it's like it's a very competitive market as well. And yes, it's not completely 100% sustainable, because if you wanted to live 100% sustainability, I asked my question, what would I do? I'd have to go and live in some cave in some, you know, in the upper regions of the Himalayas and eat berries or whatever grew locally. And then, you know, okay, I would be living my, you know, ideal sustainable life. And believe you me, I've done it for a bit. And but then I wouldn't be able to, provide the service that I provide the women, you know. And
is this sort of the blueprint for your business? Is it replicable? Could you do this in other places?
Yeah, I mean, technically, yes, we could do it in other places, but you mean like as a franchise or as a self-sustaining individual model, which is similar to...
Yeah, like a model that could be used in other rural parts of India or elsewhere.
Yeah, and indeed it is, and we collaborate and we work together. You know, they're also people, they're also run by mostly women, and they tend to be... you know, highly educated women who have been through the system and have, you know, realized the need to empower women and to live a sustainable life. And they, and so we collaborate with them. So it is replicated in that way, but we're just different entities. We don't
Can I ask you a question? This isn't too interrogative, but you're a business.
Yeah.
Is there a reason that you chose to be a business and not a charity?
Indeed. Indeed, there is. Because in India, to set up what you call an NGO, a non-governmental organization, which is not for profit, although we are not for profit, I can tell you that, you know, just by default. The reason is that it requires 7 people to sit on your board, like for an NGO. And I could not, unfortunately, find, you know, no kind of, you know, what do you call it? My words are not flowing today. I'm not being derogatory about India, but I could not find, you know, 7, you know, 6 more people to be with me in the NGO. Right. And then the other option, I'm a lawyer, so I looked into all this. So the other option was a trust, and I couldn't find the right people to trust to be with me. So right. Then it was me, myself, I, and I set it up alone. And, you know, it's a proprietorship. Basically, you know, it's running not for profit, but it's not a legal entity that is not for profit.
Okay. So where can you see in the next 5 years your business, where can you see it going?
Well, I'd like to know what happens with Corona first before I answer that question.
Quite a thing for you? Is it like a turning point? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it is a big turning point. And also, I see now that there's so much competition. I mean, I'd like to see it going global, like becoming a global kind of brand. But I see, when I see online, there's so much competition. And like I said, you know, dirt cheap prices, great designs, great styles, great material. I don't know how ethically sourced it is, how ethically made it is. And I don't really know. People are telling, you know, when I talk to people around the world, they say, you know what? Some people say, you know, people buy the story. They want to know, you know, what's behind the product. And if it's a good story, an ethical story, you know, a story that serves, you know, people on the earth, they're interested. But in the main, most people don't really care. That's what I've been told. And I don't know. What do you think, Chris? Do people care? Do you care?
Yeah. But the thing is, I think we get to a point where if you want to buy ethically sourced or, you know, stuff which is really, you know, sort of, I can't remember the name, what we call it. We call it bio vegetables, which are grown with no...
Organic,
yeah. If you want to buy organic things, if you want to buy something which has been in some way ethically sourced, you have to pay the price. And so it cuts out a big sort of section of the population. Mm-hmm. And this is why shops such as Primark, etc., can really thrive. You know, nobody can beat their prices. And generally, I would say that the textiles that they produce, the articles that they produce, are pretty good quality.
Yeah. You know,
they sort of do a little bit of greenwashing because they've banned plastic bags in France, at least, and they give you a paper bag, but it's sort of given to you by default, even if you don't want it. You know, you have this whatever you buy shoved into a brown paper bag, which looks, you know, it's a bit of greenwashing in my opinion, but it looks what do you say, raw paper, you know, recycled paper or whatever. Therefore you think that, okay, I've done something. If you wanted to actually find, that's the other thing, is actually finding organically sourced or ethically sourced things, because the other part of it is in textiles, it's sort of notorious for being a really hard business.
Yeah.
Huge competition. And it's notorious not only for pollution, etc., etc., but it's the marketing. The marketing costs millions and millions and millions. So get it in front of people, it's really, really difficult.
Yeah, and all the modeling and the photography.
Yeah.
And so we're up against, you know, a big, you know, big market here, you know, a big, rich, you know, business market, which we can't compete with. You know, I'm a one man band, and I don't have, you know, a big investor behind me. So, and you know, I am not a multimillionaire that I can just throw money at marketing. You know, so we're going to grow organically, so to speak. You know, and it'll be through word of mouth, and you know, people. I suppose it'll be niche people who do really care. You know, about, you know, who they're helping, you know, what they're doing to the planet. You know, I do podcasts, I do blogs. So I create awareness and, you know, I build a following based on that too, you know, so that they understand where I'm coming from as the visionary. So that's called part of my marketing. It's not the stereotypical marketing, but it's part of, you know, raising awareness. But like you said, that's a valid point, that, you know, it is a lot more expensive to, you know, to buy ethically sourced products, you know, whatever, whether it's food or garments, you know, or whatever it is. And that cuts out a huge, you know, amount of the population.
It does.
You know?
It does. Yeah.
And so what can you do? I mean, you know, when I used to live in the UK, I used to buy organics and, you know, it would cost double, you know. And there would be a small section, you know, for organics because, you know, there was no demand, so there was no, there was minimal supply, you know. And then it's like, how do you increase the demand, you know? How do you increase the demand, you know, without cutting the prices, you know? You know,
I mean, there's something which could, in a small way, possibly help companies like yours is that COP28 is coming up in, I think it's in November. So there's a great deal of awareness of global warming, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
I wonder if this could be as well something that could help companies like yours.
Yeah, I mean, awareness about global warming and climate change is kind of topical at the moment. But having said that, you know, is it going to decrease the prices so that it's affordable to people? Well, it will raise the awareness. But are we going to, in practical terms, you know, make it more affordable? You know, we'd love
probably
to.
Not. No, probably
but
not.
So how can we? Unless we slash the salaries, unless we, you know.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, basically you slash salaries, and that's what the rag trade is quite famous for. You know,
sure. Yeah.
Giving, you know. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen, what would be good would be to catch up with you in a year's time. What's your next, your next big sort of project coming up? In the next year, you know, you've got a website, you've got your Etsy site, you've got your, I guess, are you selling to Amazon?
We have been, but we have to jump through a lot of loopholes, which we're in the process of doing. So, okay. Yes, we will be. And there are actually some other sites that have come up in India. I don't know if they exist. I have to explore. They're like e-commerce, like they're like Amazon, but they're like the green version of Amazon.
Okay.
You know? And they're set up with set up by entrepreneurs who want to, you know, be like Amazon but be a green Amazon, you know. So, you know, we'll be floating our products on sites like that, and that's the next thing that we'd like to do, and you know, I'd like to do, you know, more work in the awareness sector, you know, to get more people interested in, you know, the actual concepts, you know, the vision that we have and therefore the products that we have. Because, you know, for me, it's not just about buy our product. It's also about change your vision.
Sure.
You know, I don't want to be a preacher, but, you know, but, you know, I think it's necessary given the sort of drastic situation the planet's in, you know.
Where's your biggest destination market?
Biggest destination market currently, it's the UK, because I'm from the UK and so I have a lot more contacts there. But you know, we do supply out to Japan and to the USA and some other countries too. But yeah. And then we have a reasonable destination market amongst the, you know, the upper classes of the Indian society too.
Okay, good. Well, I wish you good luck with that. What we'll do is I'll get the links to your products and stuff to put on this podcast.
That would be fantastic. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Renu.
Our marketing. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Join us again at english-podcast.com and subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes. And if you have an idea for a podcast or a blog, please get in contact with us through the site at english-podcast.com.